94.5 ESPN is WKTI and WKTI HD, Milwaukee.
It's been a 50-year journey. Wisconsin, we've got a room at the top of the world tonight. The Milwaukee Bucks are NBA champions.
Broadcasting live from the Gruber Law Office's Sports Zone at Summerfest.
Hey, you did it, huh?
This is a special Buck show.
To be able to actually do it and see the confetti and do it, my brothers, man, there's nothing like it.
With Pratik Patel, Nolan Murphy, and Eric Nave.
This is a special Buck show from Summerfest. I am Pratik Patel. Joining me, my teammate Nolan Murphy and Eric Nave of The Athletic. Our famous pal sitting in the booth with me live at Summerfest. The three of us will be here from noon to 2, 800-990-3776 to join the show. We've got 2 hours of Bucks talk, basically, guys. So I kind of want to start just to make sure that we don't overlook it. And that is the simple fact that the Bucks won a championship. I mean, if you listen on weekday mornings during Jen, Gabe, and Chewy, Gabe has been adamant that the Bucks have not gotten enough love. And, Eric, you and I talked about it, I think, yesterday or the day before, but, you know, Summerfest being in September is already, like, a weird enough feeling. But the Bucks ate up a lot of the summer, right? Like, so much, like, a lot of the summer. And so it's weird to feel like, okay, we're already in September, even though we're at Summerfest, even though we're still talking about a Bucks title. But I don't know that the Bucks got the celebration they deserve, because all of us were, obviously, at the parade, which was only 6 weeks ago.
Right.
And, Eric, obviously you were walking alongside it, covering it, doing your real job instead of doing anything we're doing.
Eric's real job, yeah.
Nolan and I were, and I'm using air quotes, booking guests for the broadcast.
Booking guests, which transitioned into having a beer and really just being, you know, among the people. That's what I felt my role was best used at.
Honestly, that was the experience to have. Like, that's what the entire city deserved, was just a party, like, for that entire day. And that's exactly what it was. And I do think you're right. Like, it's this really strange thing where the NBA moves so quickly that it doesn't really set in that you're the champs, because immediately, you know, like, a week later you're talking about the draft, a week later you're talking about free agency, a week later I'm in Vegas for Summer League, and now, like, the league is kind of taking some time off, but somehow the Nets sign a new veteran every single day, and everyone wants to talk about the Nets and how great they are. And I've seen people talking about it on Twitter, just like some of the odds are starting to come out in Vegas about, like,
over-unders, yeah, division totals, things
right,
like that.
And like what the championship odds are and all this stuff. And I mean, we're in a spot where it's the Nets and the Bucks right now. Like, everyone else is, like, hopeful. It's the Nets and the Bucks, and everyone wants to talk about the Nets. And it's just funny to see, like, people be like, oh, well, who's going to beat them? And it's like, the team that beat them last year, the Bucks. The Bucks were the team that won the whole thing. Like, it is this really weird space where you're just going to keep moving on. And I think Gabe is doing a great job of it in the mornings. And I think it is on every Milwaukeean that can hear the sound of my voice, either here at Summerfest, on the radio airwaves, or on WisconsinOnDemand.com. Like, it's your responsibility to remind everyone. And if you want to do it annoyingly, go ahead and do so. Like, if you want to be obnoxious about it, that is your right. No one can stop you for the next year. You get the next, I guess we're going to look at 10 months or so, to be obnoxious. Do whatever you want. Until they crown another champion, remind the world that Milwaukee is the city of NBA champions right now.
And I love that we're here celebrating the Bucks. I mean, let's get the elephant out of the room. It's a college football Saturday, but the Bucks deserve this. This city deserves it. You know, I'm at full authority to claim this was the greatest Milwaukee sports summer ever, because it took up so much of the summer. The NBA Finals being so late. I mean, I feel like we just left the parade a couple weeks ago, and to Eric's point, we're in this kind of dark period right now in the NBA, but we also, the Olympics were days after the Bucks won.
Literally days.
I don't know how Chris Middleton and Drew Holiday still got to the Olympics. I mean, it might have been in a spaceship, but, you know, the party continues. Giannis has already gone over to Greece. Mark Lazary, the Bucks owner, one of the Bucks owners, he's planning to go back to Greece with Giannis. I mean, this party should not stop, and we live in a sports culture that we're on to the next thing, we're on a free agency, and we live in a state where we can't ignore that the Packers are the number one team in this state, but we need to continue to give the Bucks the congratulations they deserve. Like, I can't wait till Giannis walks out to Lambeau Field with the Larry O'Brien. I mean, that place is going to go nuts. We've already seen him at AmFam Field. You know, right. He's a Bucks minority or Brewers minority owner now. That's unreal. But just continue to celebrate, you know, winning a championship.
Yeah, and, I mean, you mentioned the Packers, and we're not going to do any Aaron Rodgers talk, but that was part of why I feel like, you know, from a public perception for the city, for the state, it felt like we moved on from the Bucks too quickly, is because we went right into that training camp drama. Is he going to show up? Is he not? And not to mention, the Brewers are still firing on all cylinders. Obviously, a tough one last night, but they're really good, and they're going to contend. And, you know, Nolan, you mentioned this might be the best Milwaukee sports summer ever. Like, it's not even over.
It's not. Right.
Like, we still have a Brewers postseason to go through. And so, looking back on this title, and Eric, I don't want to overlook what you did on Parade Day, and that was one of the best Giannis stories I've ever heard. So just for anyone who didn't read it, asktheathletic.com, after the parade was over, after the speeches were done on the stage, you ended up grabbing Giannis for, what was it, 6 minutes?
Yeah, somewhere in there, 6-7 minutes.
And so tell us a little bit about how you end up grabbing him and what the conversation was like, because obviously you could read about it, and the way it was written, you could feel sort of the energy. And I mean, obviously, you could, anyone that was there that day, you could feel the energy. But tell me a little bit about what that was actually like, talking to him. What kind of mindset was he in, and what did you feel coming off of that?
Yeah, I mean, it's all kind of a blur, right? Which is just like what a team winning a championship should feel like. But, you know, like, the parade ends, everyone gets off the stage, Giannis is running around, he's trying to find Thanasis, who's in his own little Jeep by the stage, and all of a sudden he's trying to find his way over there, and I was just about to grab him to talk to him, and he just goes right past me, and I'm like, what is he doing? And, what he was doing was going to go stand on a Jeep and overlook an entire crowd, which is like one of the more famous Instagram pictures that I think came from this entire thing, is Giannis on top of the Jeep looking out over the
just
world.
Just a sea of people.
And so to paint the picture, I was about to interview him then. He goes onto the Jeep. I start talking to John Horst, and then all of a sudden Giannis is coming back, and I'm like, all right, well, John, it's great. I mean, I appreciate talking to you, but I got to talk to you.
Thanks for the time, Sean, but I got to go.
It's great. I got to get it.
We're
gotta move.
Acquiring some second-round picks.
Yeah, I'm going to move you to the side. I'm going to go talk to Giannis. And it was just kind of – it was really interesting because, like, all of the excitement had kind of – I don't want to say dissipated, but, like, all the cool stuff had happened. The game had been won. The parade is done. He's through it. He just stood on the Jeep. And, you know, like, I come over there, and I'm just like, you know, like, how does this feel? And – I mean, I still don't really know why he did it, but he grabs my left hand and puts it on his heart, and he's like, feel how this is beating, and it's going a million miles an hour. And, I think it just kind of, to me, it showed what all of this means to Giannis, even if, like, he does try to stay very calm. He doesn't try to, like, let these, like, big moments go up and down. He tries to stay level-headed. Like, even that's 2 days after a championship, the parade is done, and he's still feeling that way, and I think it just kind of showed kind of what he was about. And I thought the thing that stood out in our conversation was that, you know, he is someone who is singularly focused on winning at all times. He won, and yet as we're sitting there talking, he's talking about winning number two, and he's talking about how I'm going to continue to improve and how I can continue to get smarter and how I can continue to grow as both a basketball player and the skills that I have, but also as a person. And, you know, I just thought it was kind of this fun conversation. And then on top of it, it was everyone put some respect on our name. There was a couple F-bombs I couldn't say because we're on radio. But
I got real worried for a second.
Yeah, no, I wasn't going to do that.
You're a professional.
Yeah, I try to be. And, I mean, that's just kind of the whole summer is like they won a championship, but then you're still led by this guy that's 26 years old going into next season, who's, oh, by the way, won two MVPs, who's won a finals MVP, who's won a ring. At 26 years old, we're talking about someone on pace to be one of the 10 greatest basketball players in the history of the game. I will say that again. One of the 10 greatest players in the history of the game. Like, that was something that, you know, you could kind of, like, talk about, but until you get the ring, that is not real. That's not a reality, because you're always going to have the question about the ring. He's got a ring now. You can't tell that dude anything.
Yeah.
You don't think I'm good enough in the clutch? What about 40 and 10? And then 40 and 10. Oh, and then a 50-burger to close it out. What about all that? Oh, what about defense? Yeah, remember when I covered both an alley and an oop? Like, I can do that. Like, in a single play, I can cover an alley and an oop. I got it. Like, you can't tell that dude anything anymore. And now you are, like, you need to talk about him in a historical perspective. It's not a cute story in Milwaukee anymore. It is not just, hey, here's this guy that's doing some fun things in a small market. That is one of the greatest basketball players of all time. That's the conversation.
That's Eric Name of The Athletic joining myself and Nolan Murphy, 94.5 ESPN Milwaukee, streaming online at WisconsinOnDemand.com and the Wisconsin On Demand app. We are going to, I mean, we have 2 hours here. We're on the air till 2, so we're going to have plenty of time to look ahead, but I want to continue reflecting on both this past season, and obviously, you know, we'll talk plenty about the Nets, which we mentioned, and, you know, what the other kind of contenders look like, and, you know, we're going to get to this offseason and some of the changes that we're going to see with this team going into next year as well. But, you know, if you have to pinpoint one, like, lasting memory from this run, is it the parade? Is it that moment? Or is it actually something from one of the games? Which, obviously, by the time we got to the second round of the playoffs, so from Brooklyn onward, you were traveling, right? Which you were not doing for the first round of the series, or for the first round of the playoffs, nor were you during the regular season. Does something stick out from actually being in the arena for one of those things, or is it the celebration?
No, I think it's game five. It's the end of game five in Phoenix, because you're sitting in this spot where, you know, they take two, Bucks take two, and it's even at 2-2. It's game five. It's on the road. Those are the games that kind of decide series, and the Bucks have taken a lead. Everything's looking good, and then they have a crummy offensive possession. And then all of a sudden you have Devin Booker bringing it up the right side of the floor on P.J. Tucker, and that's the matchup they wanted. Like, P.J. Tucker, for as great as a defensive player as he is, had nothing for Devin Booker. In that entire series, he had nothing. Booker was getting where he wanted. He was getting the jump shots that he wanted. The Suns have exactly what they want, down one. This is where you want it. It's in the flow. This isn't a half-court set. This is Devin Booker with as much possible space and freedom to attack P.J. Tucker. He does it well. He gets himself to a spot where he's done those moves the whole time, put the shoulder in, thought about the step back.
He's about to do what he did to every single player who's guarded him the entire postseason, where he gets to a spot, he drops, and then he turns around, and he's going to rise and take a shot.
He was unguardable.
Yeah, and you couldn't touch it. You couldn't do anything about it, and he gets to that spot, and when he turns, all of a sudden, Drew Holiday throws the clamps on, Steele going the other way, and to me, that's the moment that sticks out, because you have the full range of emotions, right? You have the Phoenix crowd going crazy, trying to help their team get the stop. They get the stop, and then you can hear the excitement building, because they know, oh, we're about to take the lead in Game 5 of the NBA Finals. Book's got the matchup that he wants, and you're feeling that crowd start to build and build and build. And as he's spinning away, everyone's getting ready to lose their minds. All of a sudden, it gets dead quiet. And Drew Holiday is going the other way. And the smart play is pull it out. And instead, Giannis is screaming, throw it, throw it, throw it, throw it, throw it. And it's
just a reckless play, too.
An objectively dumb play.
Yeah,
objectively. And it's legendary.
And I love it.
It's absolutely legendary. And it's funny, like, people always say, like, oh, you know, Drew, where you were worried about, like, throwing it, like, too high or whatever it was. The only possible problem was he threw it too late. Like,
right.
Because he had the indecision in his head where he was like, I shouldn't do this. I should not do this. But the two-time MVP is screaming at me, throw it, throw it, throw it, throw it, throw it, throw it. So, okay, throws it, Giannis gets it, and one. And to me, that's the moment, because that's the moment where it felt real, right? Like, this whole time, the whole run, you're not thinking the Bucks can actually do it, right?
Right. I mean,
because they're the underdogs.
You were ready for the floor to fall out.
Yeah.
We've been pounding never trust the Bucks into people's brains
for years
now.
Rule number one, never trust the Bucks. Never, ever, ever, ever trust the Bucks. So even with a fourth quarter lead in game five on the road, that's perfect never trust the Bucks time, because it's a bad idea. It's going to go poorly, and it was sitting right there, and then instead it all flips. And then all of a sudden you realize, Giannis is a force of nature that the Suns can't do a thing about. Drew Holiday's making defensive plays all over the place. Chris Middleton's been great in this series. Brooke Lopez, P.J. Tucker, Bobby Portis. You just go down the line, Pat Connaughton. You just keep finding these spots where it's like, yeah, the Bucks are going to win this thing. And to me, that was the moment because that was the moment it felt real.
And to Eric's point, in Game 5 in the fourth quarter, I was waiting for Scott Skiles or Larry Drew to walk in that door and drop some awful plays. Because that's
just
the Bucks.
Kick, yeah.
That is the Bucks we all grew up with. If you're under 30, you grew up with this awfully coached team. You know, players in and out, players that didn't want to play here, like Richard Jefferson. They wanted out right away. And it was amazing. I think that is, you know, we renamed a play that was already named in the playoffs. The Valley-Oop. DeAndre Ayton did that
against the Clippers.
Before.
Yeah, they already used that name, man.
And we stole it.
The Bucks one was so good, they were like, no, we don't care.
And I have a T-shirt with that photo on it. The best part of that photo is that CP3 is right there, but LeBron James is sitting right there in the crowd, and he can't believe that he now has to legitimately give Giannis respect moving forward. He can't recruit him because Giannis has no interest in that. The only other play I would point out, and I think people should never ignore how we got here, is the Durant foot game. That is game 7 for the rest of my life. The Durant foot game, foot on the line, thank you for wearing too big of shoes, or whatever you do, because if not, we're never even having a Bucks celebration, you know, show at Summerfest on Labor Day weekend.
And that one is crazy, too, because there was legitimate confusion. Again, we were traveling, but we weren't traveling to the same extent, right? So the media's up at the top level, or the top of the first level, and none of us really have a true read on it, on the official scoreboard. So not the scoreboard in the arena. The scoreboard in the arena says it's tied. It was a 2. The official scoreboard, which is always the one that, like, media members are looking at, says the Nets are up 1. And it says it all the way until the moment the Bucks inbound the basketball. So I'm sitting there trying to figure out, was that a 2 or a 3? So, like, there was legitimate confusion in the arena. Like, not, like,
it
obviously
was chaos. I was watching the Broad House outside. It was chaos.
So nobody has any idea. And then, obviously, it ends up being tied. And then they play the ugliest overtime in the history of overtimes. 4 points scored total for the entire thing. No one can do anything. But then all of a sudden, James Christian Middleton comes in with a little turnaround jumper in the middle. Giannis comes in with a little hook shot in the middle. There's your 4 points. Bucks win. And it's literal. It's just insanity because, again, we talked about how that pivotal Game 5 was in Phoenix. I went to Brooklyn for Game 5. I saw the Bucks lose Game 5, and I thought, well, it's a wrap. Like, it's over. Like, you don't come back from that. Not maybe you win Game 6, but you're going to go back to Brooklyn in Game 7. You're going to lose Game 7.
You don't beat Kevin Durant twice in a row in, you know, game-clinching, game-eliminating games.
Honestly, I will admit this. I told Sam Amick and Jeff Zilgit of the USA Today during the Eastern Conference Finals, I was like, Durant in Game 5 and Game 7 in Brooklyn was a religious experience. And they were like, dude, you cover Giannis. That is the – and I was like, I understand what you're saying.
But you respect basketball.
But, like, I cannot truly believe what Kevin Durant did in those two games. It was unbelievable. And the Bucks somehow won that game. So, again, like I said – this is a spot where Bucks fans need to remind the world obnoxiously, politely, however they might want to do it. I don't know if this means you wear a Bucks championship T-shirt to a Brewers game. I don't know if that means you wear it to Lambeau. I don't know what it means, but remind the world that the Bucks are the NBA champions.
We are live from the Gruber Law Offices Sports Zone, a special Bucks show from Summerfest. That is Eric Name of The Athletic. Nolan Murphy joining me as well. I'm Pratik Patel. Coming up next, we will start to look ahead a little bit more than we've done. Obviously, wanted to spend some time reflecting on the title run and what was a momentous occasion for Milwaukee. But we'll start to look at the offseason, some of the changes that were made by this team. Who's gone? Who came in? Who stayed? 94.5 ESPN Milwaukee. WisconsinOnDemand.com. The Wisconsin On Demand app. Next.
Careers. You're listening to a special Summerfest Bucks show on 94.5 ESPN. Live from the Gruber Law Offices Sports Zone.
Portis, three-pointer from the corner. Bango Bobby.
Bango Bobby Portis right there of the Milwaukee Bucks. A re-signed Milwaukee Buck, Nolan Murphy, Pratik Patel, and the Athletic's Eric Name, live from Summerfest for a special Bucks show as we celebrate the 2021 NBA Championship. We are live from the Gruber Law Offices Sports Zone until 2 p.m. And we're just here, ladies and gentlemen, to celebrate the Bucks' second ever championship. We just kind of walked down memory lane of how it was that day, that summer, and as I proclaimed, the best sports summer ever in the history of Milwaukee, and it's not going anywhere. As the Brewers are in contention for a pennant, and the Packers are around the corner, the Badgers in a rock fight, too, in Madison right now against Penn State, still 0-0 in the second quarter. But as we look ahead, free agency, the door's not closed yet on free agency, and Eric, you're our Bucks insider really here. There's still some moves getting made left and right. You know, the Brooklyn Nets somehow seem to sign another veteran buyout guy every other day. As you look back since the parade, what are your takeaways from the Bucks free agency?
I mean, I think it starts with, obviously, the idea of the luxury tax, right? Like, so because the Bucks won a championship, they were in the luxury tax last season.
Right.
Because of an unlikely bonus as an NBA champion. Again, as an NBA champion, not the worst thing to be.
No. Easy price to pay.
Pretty easy price to pay. Drew Holiday had a bonus that pushed the Bucks into the luxury tax last year. So they are going to be in it even more seriously this year. And essentially, they decided on the opening night of tampering, or whatever you want to call whatever it is that free agency is at this moment, whenever the moratorium was through and you could actually talk to free agents, very quickly PJ Tucker signed with the Miami Heat for 2 years, $15 million. If the Bucks would have signed him to that exact deal, and again, it has never come out what was on the table, exactly how this all went down. PJ Tucker had a salty Instagram post, I would say, afterwards, kind of a little bit shocked that he wasn't back in Milwaukee. But that $7 million would have added another $23 million in luxury tax. So eventually the Bucks have been paying $30 million for PJ Tucker for just this upcoming season. When you factor in the luxury tax, they decided that that was not something that they wanted to do. Mark Lazary talked with our guy Sam Amick and Anthony Slater on the Tampering Podcast over at The Athletic this week, and essentially admitted, like, yeah, like the luxury tax is a part of the conversation. We're not gonna lie about it or say anything different. Like, that's just kind of the reality of the business, and that's going to get a lot of attention, right? Immediately after, because the Heat also signed Kyle Lowry, everyone wanted to talk about the Miami Heat. That was very exciting. But Miami Heat are old, and the Bucks, if you look at, other than PJ Tucker, you're looking at the top 7 minutes played guys all come back to the Bucks this year. If you're looking at it continuity-wise, something like 80% of the players that played minutes last year, 80% of those minutes come on back. So we're looking at pretty much the exact same Bucks team. And obviously Dante DiVincenzo, torn tendon in his left foot, that's going to be a little bit of a concern, but it is kind of crazy to think through all of this and see, like, so many people immediately discount the Bucks just because they lost PJ Tucker, when in reality, pretty much the entire team comes back. And this Bucks team is going to be ready to go again next season.
And Pratik, I look at it as an outlier. I'm fine getting rid of PJ Tucker as a fan, because I would rather get rid of someone too early than too late. You don't want to be paying a PJ Tucker that, if you look at it offensively, did not impact the game that much. Now, defensively, we'll never know what the stress he put on Kevin Durant in that Eastern Conference Finals, and that's really what's going to go on PJ's resume as a Milwaukee Buck, I think, is that Eastern Conference Finals and getting the Bucks over the hump. But how did you look at the PJ Tucker departure?
Yeah, I think, well, there were two elements. You know, I think fans were upset because, you know, based on his Instagram post that Eric mentioned and the contract that he ended up getting from the Miami Heat, it felt like, okay, this was ownership, you know, choosing not to pay him. And obviously Eric mentioned the cap ramifications of it. But, you know, ownership has said for years now that they're willing to go into the luxury tax. It just has to be worth it. And, I mean, I don't want to relitigate Malcolm Brogdon every time we talk about the Bucks, because it's my least favorite Bucks conversation. But, like, you know, if you feel a player is worth going into the luxury tax for, then, like, you'll do it. And, like you mentioned, PJ Tucker, we don't know when that his abilities are going to come to an end. So, really, what, you know, I think the big thing with PJ Tucker is, like, in this title run, in the last, you know, 5-6 months, where you were able to put together a title run and overcome a lot of adversity, with your back's against the wall, you fight back, were you able to capture all of that PJ Tucker brought and take it into next season, where you don't have PJ Tucker to actually bring that fearlessness, that tenacity? You know, I think there are a lot of different obviously, there are a lot of different attitudes, a lot of different personalities in that locker room, and, you know, some of them are calming presences, and some of them are, you know, your intense, like, hype guys, and losing P.J. Tucker, like, that to me is almost where there might be a bigger impact in his loss, because I don't know how much he has left on the floor. Obviously, he proved that he's worth another contract, and he can for sure still play, you know, just depends on what you're asking of him, but, you know, in the locker room, on the sidelines, in huddles, like, are you able to replicate what he brought to you? Because you have now gotten over the hump, right? And so maybe you already have all that, and you have it forever because you got over the hump multiple times in this postseason run, and you won a title. And so now there's no, you know, that elephant in the room is gone. That monkey on your back is gone. So, like, are you able to replicate what P.J. Tucker brought, and are you going to be okay with him not there to bring it for you every night?
I think one thing that I've learned talking with people around the organization is that, you know, that is a nice thing to have for 2 months. Like, you have it for the end of the regular season, you have it for the postseason, that's good. But I do think there might have been some concerns within that locker room, within the organization, that if you have that guy around all the time, it can get really grating. It can be a situation where it's like, PJ, dude, you got to chill out, man. Like, you're not going to play 35 minutes every single night. We need you to be healthy. PJ wasn't happy when the Bucks made him sit out for 15 games. Like, that was something he did
not... But they needed that.
They needed him to sit out and get right. Like, he had an injury that he wanted to play through, and they're like, dude, we are good at basketball. We don't need you in every game. We don't need you for these games. Like, just get right so that you'll be okay in the end. And I do think there was, you know, like I said, some level of concern that as you're trying to figure out what's going on and how you're going to have this team going forward, you don't need the intensity of P.J. Tucker night in, night out for a 10-month season.
Nolan Murphy, Pratik Patel, and the Athletics' Eric Name celebrating the Bucks championship for a special Bucks show live from Summerfest at the Gruber Law Sports Zone. Come down, see us. We will be here until 2 p.m. Next, CEO of Good Karma Brands and Bucks minority owner Craig Karmerson will join us right here on 94.5 ESPN Milwaukee.
Less than a minute to play. Middleton comes around, takes a jumper, gone! Right side by Middleton! 102-96. Timeout, Phoenix.
This is a special Bucks show from Summerfest. I'm Pratik Patel, Eric Name at the Athletic, and we have replaced Nolan Murphy, at least for the time being, with Craig Karmerson, CEO of Good Karma Brands and minority governor of the Milwaukee Bucks.
Wow, minority governor.
Isn't that?
No, I think a minority investor. Like, the governor is the actual, like, person who makes the
I thought
ball.
We just replaced the word owner with governor, like,
no,
across the board, and that's not how it works.
I don't think so. No.
Oops.
Minority investor.
Minority investor in the Milwaukee Bucks joining us now live at Summerfest from the Gruber Lofts and Sports Zone. Greg, we were just talking about PJ.
I want to talk to Mark Lazary and get one day where I get to be governor of the team.
Just like, title? Do you want any of the tasks?
No.
Do you want to actually run it?
Yes, one day. Just one day.
There's no way that happens.
I think they would trust me.
You have big ideas.
What do you think?
You always have big ideas.
I know, but I don't think I would do too much. I might like make like highlight like respect videos for like Kendall Marshall and like every player who's played like a minute. Like when they come back,
right,
to
we
town.
Gotta have tribute videos. That's the thing we need to fix.
There's gonna be six more jerseys hanging in the rafters.
Tribute videos, and then the other thing, which I've already talked to Peter Fagan about, all seriousness, and I'm getting. I think league-wide, I'm hoping to roll this out, is a next level of respect for the U.S. Olympic gold medal players. Ooh. Because I have so much respect for what those guys went out and did this summer. Not just, you know, Holiday, Booker, and Middleton off the short rest, but all those guys. They're not getting paid. There's no upside to going. If you win, oh, yeah, they were supposed to, whatever. I didn't watch it. It was 2 in the morning. If they lose, oh, they're overpaid. They just shoot threes. They don't do anything. There was no upside, only downside. They go. They're playing against teams that are now – remember, the Dream Team was 29 years ago now. All these other countries have been playing. And so they go out, and they do it. They do it together. And they do it for a country that in – you know, most arenas in this league, they are just called expletives from the second they walk on the court. So what I have proposed to Peter Fagan, who is bringing it to the league, is that each game when an Olympian comes to the arena for the first time, there's a respect shown. And I'd love to see, you know, you get instead of Kevin Durant getting, you know, cursed when he walks in the door at Pfizer Forum, how about him getting a standing ovation as him, Drew Holiday, and Chris Middleton stand out there, and we respect those three guys who were so key in winning a gold medal. So that's what I do when I'm governor for a day.
Honestly, I thought you were going to, like, try to make some trades, so maybe you could get away with being owner for a day.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what you'd be able to accomplish in one day in terms of personnel. Yeah. I'm guessing that stuff probably doesn't fly as much, but...
John Horst does a great job. I don't want to... I would sign John Horst to an extension.
And John, maybe, John is aggressive, too. He moves quick. When he sees something, he moves quick on it.
Maybe, I mean, Zach Lowe, I heard Coach Bud say to him he was going to go for a 30-year extension in this offseason because he wants to be here forever. I might throw Coach Bud another 4 or 5 years.
Why not?
You know?
Yeah, there's
nothing
wrong with that.
I mean, Nolan said earlier, like, we talk about coaches, and Coach Bud got criticized more than anyone. And I think everyone always assumes they know what the coach's job is. And they're like, oh, Coach has it easy. He's got Giannis, who's the greatest guy, who works hard. He's got Chris, who's quiet. He's got Drew. I mean, and then all of a sudden, he's being mocked, right? The whole postseason for play free, pay loose, play random. And what does Drew Holiday do in the biggest moment of the postseason? He played loose and random, and that's the memory we all have.
He played loose and random, and then turned the loose and randomness up like 10 levels immediately after.
A little bit to reckless, but that's okay. No, I mean, and I think that is one thing with Bud, is that people, when things aren't going right and you hear your leader giving the same message, it's, okay, he can't adjust, he doesn't know what he's doing, but part of being a coach is giving that steadiness, is giving your team, like, the balance it needs rather than, we need to run a box in one. Let's try a zone. Let's try all this stuff.
So, Eric, we know your answer now, but what was your answer when people would say, why doesn't Coach Bud tell Giannis to take just one dribble and shoot the free throw? Because, you know, it's not working, and it only gets worse when he takes longer time. What was your answer then, and what's your answer now?
I mean, Giannis with free throws for a long time has been – he knows it's something he needs to work on. He shoots a million of them every day, and he just keeps going and going and going. So for me, I've never been someone like – that says, hey, you got to change up his motion right now.
But don't think the thing that we don't see as people who are not in the game is how stubborn Giannis needs to be as good as he is. And Giannis isn't going to change his free throw. And it's that stubbornness that made him go to the basket even when he was shooting under 50%, right? Because he had that confidence in himself. And it's why he did pull up for 7 3-pointers, I think, in the first half of a playoff game. I mean, those things, it's not like Coach Bud doesn't know the analytics that sometimes those might not be the best threes, right?
And also, he's Giannis. If he wants to take a three, take a three, man. Like, I've seen Marcus Johnson, he really gets into it on Twitter with people, but he'll just be like, those are superstar shots. Like, if I needed one of those, you know what Don Nelson was cool with? Me taking one of those. Like, if that's what your guy needs to do to get into rhythm, then that's what your guy needs to do to get into rhythm. So, I don't know. It's always been interesting with the criticism of Giannis. Why doesn't he take smarter shots? Why doesn't he change his free throw? To be as good as he is, he has to do the things that he needs to do. Like, and he has to do them in the ways that he feels comfortable doing them. And if that means he airballs a three, so be it. Because he's shown he doesn't care. He does not care if he airballs a three. He's going to shoot another one, or he's going to attack the basket. Or, I mean, I was watching highlights of, I think it was game 6 the other night. He gets people on pump fakes. Like, if he takes that little rhythm dribble, all of a sudden DeAndre Ayton runs at him, and he blows by for a layup. That worked. He airballed three threes, but it worked.
So you guys were also talking about P.J. Tucker and everything that comes from that. So it was over a decade ago, right? Now when CeCe Sabathia came here and just selflessly was pitching on like 2 days rest and willing the Brewers into a postseason. And when you think about it, it took that long for someone to come to Milwaukee and have as impactful of a selfless run, you know, into a postseason and through that P.J. Tucker had. Remember, with no Dante, you know, after, you know, that first few games of the Heat series, it wasn't just P.J. Tucker playing extended minutes. It was him starting. It was him, you mentioned covering Kevin Durant. Like, there's no rings. There's no Bobby chance without P.J. Tucker. There's no – this is all – you know, so as much as P.J. Tucker is going to get in a fight with Bobby Portis when the Heat comes to town, and as much as he's going to get booed and all that, you know, this is only a championship team because of that, you know, that willingness to go all in on not only Jrue Holiday but on P.J. Tucker, and, you know, undying, unending respect to what P.J. Tucker meant to that team.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's going to get booed. Everyone loves that dude. Like,
I'm saying when he and Bobby are
once the game gets started, they're like...
Everyone will stand and applaud because this is what they want. Like, they love those two guys. And I think the thing with P.J. that's really interesting is...
And by the way, for him, how great is it that he got a championship, right?
Absolutely.
What he means
to the
NBA.
One of the most underappreciated... I mean, him and Jrue Holiday both are, like, widely regarded around the league as, like, two of the most underappreciated, like, underrated players in the league, and they both just got a title.
And honestly, I would consider myself a bit of a nerd. Like, that is kind of what I do for basketball. And a lot of nerds in the finals were like, you got to put Pat Connaughton in the starting lineup. Like, it's got to be Pat instead of PJ because PJ gives you nothing offensively. And the thing I kept trying to tell people was, okay, yes, PJ did not shoot a three. PJ did not score on that play. But every time they took a shot, PJ crashed the glass. And by the end of the game, all of a sudden you're getting three-tip offensive rebounds. You're getting all of these extra possessions because PJ is just outworking the other team. And that takes a toll, not just on the defensive end where they're not finishing possessions. On the other end, if you have to work that hard on defense, it's not as easy on offense. And I just thought everything he did, every way that he contributed, was totally selfless because it's not fun to get scored on. It's not fun. But if you're going to cover Devin Booker and you're covering Kevin Durant, it's going
to
happen.
And then the other thing I want to mention is there's another guy. Chris Middleton was on the Bucks this year. I don't know if anyone realized that. You know, because, you know, he didn't have the signature play that everyone else had, right? Jrue had his, Giannis had his, even Bobby and PJ, there's plays. Chris Middleton had signature quarters, right? Two of them in Phillips Arena against the Hawks, you know, that, you know, one without Giannis, one with Giannis in game three, where he just went crazy. I mean, he had a 40-point game against the Nets, right? You know, in when that series came back in game four or game six. So, you know, what Chris Middleton did, you know, what I would say is he would do things during a game that would say, like, oh, my God, he's going to be a superstar by the end of this game. Then he would do the post-game interview, and he'd be so boring, I'd be like, oh, he's back to Chris Middleton. No one's going to remember this again.
I tweeted it out yesterday, or no, 2 days ago.
Yeah.
The in-and-out move he had on Durant, he shook Kevin Durant out of his shoes, hits a little, but since it's Middleton, of course, he hits like a little floater at the end of it. So it's not as good of a highlight, but he still shook him.
There were also two entire playoff series after that.
Right.
You know, like, we remember Durant's moments from that. That series, because he didn't have any more moments after that. But all we remember for the Bucks are, like, basically the finals, because it's so recent. But Chris had several moments. They were just almost all in that Nets series.
And by the way, Chris had unbelievable moments in the Hawks series, Nets series, and a few in the Sun series. But let's remember, who knows if he doesn't hit that shot in game one against the Heat. Again, we could say the Bucks would have won. It would have been fine. But does the locker room start getting tight? If they lose game one at home, who knows how things start to go?
Does Bud hear all of the idiots in the media like me talking about adjustments and totally change? Because they were trying something new in that Heat series. So that's a great point. And then, to me, the thing that's always been interesting about Chris is no one will tell you how good Chris is more than Giannis. Giannis will tell you until you're tired of listening to it, Chris is incredible. And to me, one of the moments that stands out, Giannis, 48 points, one basket away from a 50-burger in a closeout game of the NBA Finals. And what does he do? He doesn't take a shot. He doesn't go to the basket. He turns his back to the basket and hands it off to Chris Middleton, who whips around, shoots a jumper, closes out the Sun series. Like, that's all you need to know, that if I have 48 in an NBA Finals game, I'm not passing.
By the way, I literally got chills when I thought about that shot, him coming on the court, because it was still scary at that point, right?
Yeah, it was a four-point game, and if he doesn't hit that, all of a sudden, who knows what happens. We saw the same thing happen in Game 5 where the Bucks end up stealing it. The same thing could have happened with the Suns, and to me, like, I was in awe, one, of Giannis's selflessness and belief in Chris, And then Chris to just coolly and calmly be like, yeah, this is normal. This is, yeah, I should get the ball right now. And, yeah, I should take this shot. Do I have two people? I don't care. Like, I'm going to make the shot. To me, that's Chris.
Last thing I'll say on Bud is, you know, people are going to, you know, say, you know, they underachieved here, there. I get up 2-0. You expect to win that Raptors series. But do we look at those two rosters now and think that the Bucks had the better roster in that series? I don't think so, right? The only Bucks play big man off the bench in that series was Ersan Ilyasova. Nikola Mirotic was a starter in that series.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and the Raptors, I mean, with we saw that Fred VanVleet, it turned out it wasn't a fluke what he was doing in that series.
Right.
He's worth $20 million a year.
Along with all the other talent. So I think now when you look at it, sure, the Bucks, you wish they would have won in the bubble, but the bubble's tough to categorize. So
also, best record in the NBA, NBA Finals, and then Eastern Conference Finals, second round, NBA Finals. What more do you want from someone? Like, with the randomness of the NBA, right? Like, it's really tough to go to finals after finals after finals, unless you're LeBron James. Like, unless you're that dude, that's a super impressive run.
Okay, so now, is Giannis kind of turned into, like, Space Jam Michael Jordan in Game 6?
Yes.
When the Nets now, are they becoming some kind of Space Jam opponent, Monstars type unit, like as they're assembling for this year?
I mean, as I've reflected on the finals, I've told Pratik this a number of times. We remember kind of LeBron for that game with the Heat where he's in Boston and he has that look in his eyes,
yep.
Right? That might be Giannis now. Like that, we might be talking about a guy that if you need 40 tonight. Okay, I'm going to get you 40, you're going to get 15 rebounds, and you're probably going to get 5 assists. Like, I'm doing that every night you need it, like, in those moments. Because Giannis had those repeatedly throughout the postseason. So, Space Jam team, you got the Toon Squad,
right.
it doesn't matter.
Here's my argument against why the Bucks may have a better chance against the Nets than they did last year, okay? Argument why the Bucks have a better chance against the Nets than this year. Kevin Durant is the most efficient offensive scorer on the planet. And if Kyrie and Harden are healthy, he would not have that much usage. He would not be shooting that much. So, in actuality, those guys being on the court takes shots and possessions away from Kevin Durant. Discuss among yourselves.
I think it makes sense, but like, it's not like Harden isn't also like an incredibly efficient scorer. And, you know, if he's fully healthy, like, they're still, I don't know that they're better or worse than they were last year, in terms of the Nets.
What I'm saying. I just don't think they become incrementally better.
I don't think they've ascended in any way.
Because Durant leading a possession is pretty much the top of what you can get in the world. We just saw that in the Olympics.
It's the best case scenario you could possibly have as someone on a basketball team.
I mean, as I told Nolan earlier, I called Game 5 and Game 7 in Brooklyn from Durant a religious experience. Like, I could not believe what he was doing.
I was at Game 5, and I left Game 5 saying, the Bucks are going to win this series because a human can't do
what that guy just did again.
So the Bucks will win this series. I felt good about 6, and I felt, hey, this is not a building you can't come into and win.
Right.
Although he kind of then went out like did it again.
He was unbelievable. I think where your argument holds water is giving Kyrie more possessions. I think that is a spot where you can find some recklessness. He has a level of selfishness in him where...
By the way, and he was a 50-40-90 player this year. So we're saying, give more possessions to that guy.
Yeah, still better than Kevin Durant because that dude's a cheat code.
Last thing for you, Craig, before we let you go. So you mentioned being in Brooklyn for Game 5 and, you know, feeling like the Bucks were going to win even after the game that Kevin Durant had just put together. And you joined Jen, Gabe, and Chewy weekday mornings on ESPN Milwaukee on Fridays. And I remember after they were down, I believe you joined right after they were down 0-2 to the Nets, and you were, like, pretty positive. Like, we still have 2 games at home. And obviously they go down 0-2 against the Suns as well. Was there any point in this postseason where you were just... okay, I feel like we might be nearing the end here.
I mean, when Giannis goes down with the injury, which is the thing we haven't talked about today.
Right. Everything we've said about him, just remember that he did most of that, like, after his leg snapped in half.
I didn't think they were done, but I didn't think... I really did not see Giannis playing till Game 4 of that NBA Finals. And so what I was hoping was...
somehow get a split on the road and then win a game at home, but at least worst case, you're down 2-1 with Giannis coming back, or you can hold Giannis out longer. I mean, so that was the thing that was like, you know, that when you think about this thing is crazy. Like, I mean, you think you're losing Giannis at that point. Now, I really did think that the Bucks had a chance still against the Suns, but that was the scariest moment, just because I thought about more for Giannis and more for the future of the franchise and not knowing exactly what it was in that moment. So that was, to me, the scariest, worst moment.
Craig, enjoy your time at Summerfest. Thank you for a couple minutes, and congrats on your title.
Thanks, guys. I enjoy this, and I think you guys said it right. Like, it's so hard, and like when you lose, it hurts so much. You got to add up all the hurts of all the years and make this win feel as good as all the hurts combined. It can't just be as much as the hurt of 1 year. It's got to be, you know, the positive needs to be adding up all the hurts of your entire life as a Bucks fan.
As we were talking, three NBA championship t-shirts walked by Craig. I was going to jump in and like interrupt him at some point, but three of them. So good job, Bucks fans. You could maybe even do better, but still, you three, good job.
Yep, the celebration's forever. Thank you, Craig Karmazin, CEO of Good Karma Thanks, Brands, guys. Minority investor in the Milwaukee Bucks. That is Eric Name of The Athletic. I'm Pratik Patel, Nolan Murphy with us as well. We are live from Summerfest, a special Bucks show from Summerfest in the Gruber Law Office's Sports Zone. Join the show, 800-990-3776. Coming up next, we will talk more about this offseason, the additions, the subtractions, and a little bit more about that Bud extension and what that might mean moving forward, and plenty to talk about with the upcoming season as well and what a path to repeating might look like. Join the show, 800-990-3776. We are live from Summerfest on 94.5 ESPN Milwaukee, WisconsinOnDemand.com, and the Wisconsin On Demand app. This is a special Bucks show from Summerfest, live from the Gruber Law Office's Sports Zone, 94.5 ESPN Milwaukee, WisconsinOnDemand.com, and the Wisconsin On Demand app. I am Pratik Patel. Joining me today, Eric Name of The Athletic, Nolan Murphy, and a huge thanks to Craig Karmazin, CEO of Good Karma Brands, and a minority investor in the Milwaukee Bucks who just joined us. If you missed that or any of the show, you can catch all of that back on demand at WisconsinOnDemand.com, the Wisconsin On Demand app. Full podcast feeds for every show on ESPN Wisconsin. Coming up, we're going to talk a little bit more about the upcoming season, who might be in the way, and what a path to repeating for the Bucks actually looks like. One thing I do want to get both of your thoughts on in this next hour is, can we have a successful Bucks season without a title? Is there a path to success when you get to the end of the season and they potentially don't win a title? Can you look back at it as a success? Is there any way to that? Is there any way path to that? I want to get your thoughts on those. And when we come back, again, live from Summerfest, a special Bucks show from Summerfest. This is Pratik Patel, Eric Name, Nolan Murphy. More next on 94.5 ESPN.